Mr. President, are you confident you have, I know you're looking for more money from Congress for this vaccine campaign and for COVID funding going into the fall. How much of the supply of vaccines for these small children is there, and how many of the nation's kids will you be able to get vaccinated before you need more money from Congress?
Well, we'll get through at least this year. We do need more money, but we don't just need more money for vaccines for children eventually. We need more money to plan for the second pandemic. There's going to be another pandemic. We have to think ahead. And that's not something the last outfit did very well. That's something we've been doing for fairly well. That's why we need the money.
All right, that is a sweet fall right there. You got to make fun of the guy. He's the one. He's the head of the guy who's tanking the show officially out in the open. He's a PR man. He's a front man. But it's still fun to make fun of the guy. Hope you're doing well. Good to be back with you guys. It was a week ago, a little bit more than a week ago. Feels like it was maybe a month ago, something like that. But what are you going to do? It's good to be back with you. It is, what is it, June 22nd. 2022, and we're back, as the title implies, in Tartarus here today, going through some of the latest stuff, and it's it certainly didn't stop. The clown show do go on with or without us, as it were. Did you see that? They had to fact check right away, too, that the bike fall, when is it, like 2 days ago or something? I think we missed, you know, when it actually happened, right? But immediately was a... I mean, they couldn't fact check it. They couldn't say it didn't happen, but they still try. So they had one, you know, so-called kind of obviously like humorous, you know, example that someone had done, a screenshot from The Atlantic that apparently allegedly didn't really happen. But hey, don't put it past them for going here. Let me show you this real quick here. This is Reuters here, fact checking. The Atlantic did not publish headline calling President Biden's bike fall heroic. I mean, that's funny, right? The heroism of Biden's bike fall. I mean, they do have headlines like that. It's totally not like out of the blue, right? It's not unheard of. All right. Anyway, what are you going to do? All right. So a lot of things that could be commented on here since we were gone, obviously. As I said, the world has been rolling on just as usual, maybe even at a higher pace of degradation. But that's how she blows. Anyway, we have some stuff to cover today. We missed Juneteenth. Can't believe we missed Juneteenth. There was some some good stuff happening on that front too. Here's more of Biden here. Remember, he wasn't it not Trump doing this? No, I guess it was Biden. That for some reason I thought it was Trump. But listen to what Poopy Pants had to say here about this.
Happy Juneteenth, everyone. One of the great honors I've had as president was to sign the bill making Juneteenth a national holiday for the first new federal holiday since Martin Luther King Day nearly four decades ago. And it matters. It mattered to me and it matters to the country. Juneteenth marks both the long, hard night of slavery and subjugation and the promise of a brighter morning to come. A day of profound weight and power that reminds us of the extraordinary capacity to heal and hope and emerge from the most painful moments into a better version of ourselves. You know, great nations don't ignore the most painful moments in their history. They embrace them to heal and grow stronger. And we're a great nation. But it's simply not enough to commemorate.
You're making it better, sir.
For emancipation did not mark the end of American work to deliver on the promise of equality. It only marked the beginning. To honor the true meaning of Juneteenth, we must never rest until we deliver the promise of America to all Americans, all Americans. That's what Kamala and I and our administration are committed to do.
There we go. And remember this old goodie? Here it is, right?
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was in the foothills of the Himalayas with Xi Jinping.
All right. Anyway, so yes, Juneteenth, right in the Pride Month as well. So we got a boost of some good, solid, you know, anti-Western The usual gobbledygook garbage at the coming out, and I thought this was kind of funny actually. Apparently, this thing here cost $7.2 million dollars, United States dollars, $7.2 million. An afro comb, so-called afro comb, in Lafayette Square in where's it, Louisiana, I think, right? So this was the mayor there, Latoya Cantrell, with the black fist, the black power fist in front of this beautiful sculpture. And as you can see at the top there, they actually have the black rebellious fists, like they all like they're all using. So this is Juneteenth here for you guys. Furthermore, in recognition... Oh, wait, there was a... Okay, I missed a top tweet here. As Juneteenth approaches, we celebrate with an unveiling in Lafayette Square. This sculpture is very fitting for this time and place as we celebrate the freedoms that we have gained. But of course, it's never... There's always more to complain about, obviously, right? White supremacy and so forth, right? We know that it doesn't come without struggles, fights, and protests for 200 plus years. That's right. White people have never fought for their freedom. America kind of was had nothing to do with that. But oh well, you know, that's fine. It's only one oppressive group here in the in the room, as it were. And then she says, furthermore, in recognition of our local black and brown artists, we've dedicated $7.2 million. In bond funding to public art. Great. Oh, is it? Okay, so it's general. I guess it's not. This one wasn't just 7.2. Okay, I misunderstood that. It might as well be. Look, these things are slush funds, right? They pour 10, 20 million into these programs and then, you know, damn programs, and then what happens, right? In addition, we've already purchased over 60 pieces of artwork created by local black artists to be displayed in our public buildings. And what was it? Here's NOLA. Yes, Louisiana, right? Outlet here. Two-story black power hair pick. Symbol of African identity erected near Gallier Hall. New Orleans Mayor Latoya Cantrell calls temporary addition to cities. Oh, temporary. Only temporary? See? There's always something to complain about. To the city's streetscape breathtaking. There we go. And I saw something too. Here we go. Right here. A social media video shows New Orleans Mayor Latoya Cantrell pulling away sheeting to expose the estimated 24-foot-tall steel creation, All Power to All People, by artist Hank Willis Thomas. Kind of funny how that works. It's like an explicitly kind of like, you know, an Afro black power fist, but then they kind of just hide by saying, oh, no, it's just it's power to the people. That's what it is. Nothing racial or anything like that. Actually, I haven't seen that. Is there a video here? Let's check this out. I haven't seen this one. Oh, it goes on every while. Okay, is the jazz piece part of it here, maybe? All right, let's see. We'll get to it here. Gotta get the top of the cherry up there. What do you call it? Cream of the crop. Gotta get the black fist out. Incredible. All right, so there you have it. That's art, ladies and gentlemen. Remember that? Was it New York that did the kind of, it kind of looked like one of those like Africanized Easter Island statues. I think that maybe that was last year or maybe the year before. I'm not sure. George Floyd had a couple of two of them, right? And so, you know, keep in mind, just a quick little search here. That auto played. So let me pause that and refresh that so you can see some of it here, right? At least three statues. You got to keep in mind, all this happens in connection with statues being toppled and taken down. Right. And even in New Orleans itself, there's been multiple, of course, over the past couple of years. statues of John McDonough, Sophie B. Wright, and Confederate soldier Charles Didier Drouot, maybe, were vandalized Friday morning. When is this from? This is, okay, so this is like after, when was George Floyd again? Was it June? June, was it? June 2020, right? Jeez, goes so fast. And interesting, they included one, you can see in the screenshot there, on Albert Pike, right? Now, of course, you could have your criticism of Albert Pike, you know, this Freemason, right, setting up the Scottish Rite. It was the Grand Commander Supreme Council, 33 degree Freemasonic order, you know, of the Scottish Rite, blah, blah, blah. But do you think any of these people have any idea? That's not why they're doing this. It's not because, get the statue of the Mason. No, of course not. This is just because it's a white guy, right? All right, anyway, we don't have to dwell on it, but this is what a conquered culture looks like. You take down their statues, then put up, and then you put up your own. And this is what they look like right there. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. All right, so anyway, happy Juneteenth, everybody. That's how it goes. We had some other developments as well in connection to this, right? All the BLM stuff has been going on. And on Juneteenth, we had a Democrat mayor who was sucker punched and fell to the ground at one of these Juneteenth events. Authorities are investigating the incident, and no arrests have been made yet. The mayor of Louisville, Kentucky, was assaulted by a man on Saturday evening while attending a Juneteenth celebration at 4th Street Live. Video of the assaults, obtained exclusively by some outlet, some shitty local outlet, showed the suspect, a black male, approaching Democratic Mayor Greg Fisher and sucker punching him in either the upper chest or the throat. The force of the punch knocked Fisher to the ground. Let's take a look. Let me go back there. This is what? How did this shot with a potato? Oh, there we go. There you go. Happy Juneteenth, everybody. Louisville, Kentucky. Good stuff. Amazing. All right. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. That's always good times. Fun things here. Jessica Wheatington, a spokeswoman for Fisher, said the mayor is doing fine and was evaluated by EMS after the incident. This has nothing to do with race, and it's all there's no issues with this. Everything is fine. Do not worry about it. Wheatington made the comments after the video revealed that there was minimal security surrounding Mayor Fisher during the time of the attack. No arrests as well. That's fascinating. Here are the additional photos of the suspects heading southbound on 4th Street. All right. Anyway. What are you going to do? That's what happens when you support these kinds of things. And, you know, Juneteenth, in celebration of that, let's not chase people, youths and so forth, that are trying to get away on foot after committing crime in Chicago. That's a new official police policy in Chicago. The Chicago Police Department has unveiled a new policy prohibiting its officers from chasing people on foot simply because they run away or because they have committed minor offenses. I haven't seen this video. Let's listen to what they said here.
And I just want to add, as an overview, foot pursuit policies have been part of law enforcement for over a decade now. Just because Chicago PD is now implementing a permanent one, the impacts on crime has been studied, and we can look back at foot pursuit policies. It's made officers safer, and it's made the community safer in cities that's implementing this over a decade. So the expectation for us is, like Bob mentioned, what we'll learn and be informed by our documentation and review of how to continue to enhance officer safety as well as enhance safety of our residents.
So not chasing them is going to enhance.
And I just want to add an overview.
Let me see. For the police officers, I understand it, right? It's kind of like the Uvalde situation. There's actually been some new developments in that. I'm not intending covering that today, really, but basically, I forget what the main guy was there. Kind of the main guy in charge there. I forget what his name was, Garanzo or something. I forget what it was. But anyway, he had actually, told the police not to go out. They had treated the whole situation as something that it was not. That the suspect had barricaded himself in two rooms and they were outgunned and they couldn't make it and all that stuff. And now photos have come out and the timelines come out that shows that they had They were heavily armed. They had shields and all kinds of weird things like that, right? So this is what they do. I understand that they want to defend, you know, or protect themselves, maybe the officers in this case. But we know what this is about. This is, you know, letting people get away. It's probably deemed racist. I mean, if you read the fine print of this, it's probably like, well, you know, it's most likely that people get away on foot. They don't have a car, or you know, there's something like that. Therefore, it's racist, right? So we can't pursue them on foot anymore. All right, good stuff, fantastic. And staying on this issue a little bit more here in the U.S., the crime wave continues. Five major cities in the U.S. is on pace to pass the already very steep 2021 homicide rates. And we're only halfway through 2022 so far. Milwaukee recorded the largest homicide increase of the group, with the rate rising almost 25% over this time in 2021. Fascinating how this pans out. Five major U.S. cities are currently on pace to break their homicide totals from last year, continuing a violent trend that started in 2022. And I wonder what happened in 2022. It's kind of a little strange, kind of beyond me there. I'm not quite sure what set that off. LA, Washington, DC, Baltimore, Milwaukee, and Atlanta have all seen homicide numbers outpace their mark from 2021 halfway through this year, with Milwaukee seeing the largest spike of the group, according to crime data reviewed by Fox News. Wisconsin's largest city has recorded 96 homicides as of June 17th, compared to 77 at this time a year ago, at 24.7%. A 24.7% increase in numbers continue to trend that has plagued the country since 2020, when homicides in the U.S. increased by nearly 30% compared to 2019. That trend continued last year, with the Council on Criminal Justice Statistics showing homicides across the country in 2021 increased 5% over 2022. So we'll see how the rest of the year pans out. It's kind of been a little quiet on the rioting front here this summer, but you know, they're working on the Roe versus Wade things. I'm sure there'll be some riots in D.C. here. Depends on how the economy go, to be honest, as well. I mean, if people can't afford to, drive there because of the skyrocketing gas prices, or, you know, they got to buy food and worry about that, as opposed to going, you know, to the Supreme Court, we'll see. It might be a dud. It might not be that crazy after all, but too early to tell. And here, a little bit follow-up on the Epstein stuff, by the way, too. This is kind of interesting. Ghislaine Maxwell's prison cellmate was allegedly offered money to kill her. Reveals plan to strangle Jeffrey Epstein's ex-lover in her sleep. Yep. Small text. Let me go up a little bit bigger. Ghislaine Maxwell's cellmate claims she was offered money to kill Jeffrey Epstein's former lover-turned-convicted sex trafficker. It's just, why not pedophile? Is that so hard? And is going around the prison telling other inmates how she allegedly plans to offer. In bombshell documents filed by Maxwell's attorney on Wednesday, they claim one of the female inmates in Ms. Maxwell's housing unit told at least three other inmates that she had been offered money to murder Ms. Maxwell, and that she had planned to strangle her in her sleep. Now, of course, you got to wonder, is this fake? Is this to cover it up? Is this to try to get her out of there or something? Or maybe ever relocate? There's always that chance, right? But I would not be surprised. The filing also stated that the cellmate made it clear that murdering Maxwell for money is worth an additional 20 years incarceration. Interesting. Maxwell's legal team is pleading with the judge to give their client a lighter sentence. Of course, there you go. So maybe this is all bullshit after all. I do genuinely think they do want to offer. They do want to take her out. But again, I mean, they didn't disclose the names. There was some number of things from this trial that was sealed, right? So maybe they can't get more out of her anyway. The incident reflects the brutal reality that there are numerous prison inmates who would not hesitate to kill Ms. Maxwell, whether for money, fame, or simply street cred, the document reads. Maxwell's sentencing is set to take place on June 28th. And despite their... And didn't they slice like 10 years off of this or something ridiculous? I think that's what was going on. 10 years. Or they lowered like the maximum sentence that she could get with 10 years, I believe. But it still was like something, you know, like she'll die in there if she gets that. But we'll see. We'll see. It's not over yet. Anyway, and despite the client's disturbing conviction, Maxwell's attorneys aren't giving up. Ghislaine Maxwell is not an heiress, villain, or vapid socialite. She has worked hard her entire life. Of course she has. She has energy, drive, commitment, a strong work ethic to get those kids groomed right into this Israeli Mossad front sex trafficking ring in order to blackmail Western politicians. Now, who in the world would be against such a thing? All right, anyway, so she, you know, they're probably going to, well, she was used by the men around her, blah, blah, blah. All right, anyway, so that could be total bullshit just to try to get her out. But as I said, we'll see, right? Okay, so, you know, we talked about the conquering of our nations here earlier with this, our statues of our forebears, and you know, yes, in some cases, the people you don't agree with, but nonetheless, it's our forebears, it's people that have been instrumental somehow in different things around in our civilization. And apparently they're doing the same thing in Hong Kong right now, which is kind of interesting, where basically they're removing any claim that the city Hong Kong ever was a British colony. This is like further the evidence of the collapse of like the British Empire and how they're just waning and losing influence everywhere. This has been happening for a long time, but this is just like the final nails in that coffin, basically, right? New Hong Kong textbooks will claim city was never a British colony. School books will reportedly say China never recognized the treaties that ceded it to colonial powers during the Opium Wars. And here's the, Telegraph had more on this too. China rewrites history of Hong Kong with textbooks that deny British rule. Critics say Beijing wants to brainwash students with new syllabus that mentions national security more than 400 times in 121 pages. Wasn't it, was it the 2000 or something? Or was it, 97. I thought, for some reason, I thought it coincided with the millennium there. Prince Charles, Chris Pattern, the departing governor and Prime Minister Tony Blair at the 1997 Hong Kong handover ceremony. Who would do? I mean, it's amazing when you think back on that. Like, they're just handing, building it up, turning it into what it is, and then just handing it over. Like, I mean, yeah, you have Tony Blair, right? I mean, the whole thing came out later on too. There were books written about this in the UK, how they intentionally opened the borders to change the demographics to ensure, like, just to get, you know, at the Tories, at the Conservatives and things like this, right? That's the power of third way politics, like Tony Blair, Bill Clinton, they all were spearheading on those, on third way politics. You use neoliberal capitalism with socialist, lefty, progressive ideas, you marry the two, and then, of course, you get the corporations eventually to go on the page, as we're now seeing. This is coming to full fruition. ESGs, you know, they're signing up on these World Economic Forum, Agenda 2030 agreements, and they're signing up on all kinds of social justice causes, and that's why you see them, all these logos and signals, you know, peppered with the pride flag, you know, the rainbow crap, you know, in June. It's all, I mean, it doesn't matter that it's capitalism. It's completely dominated by the social justice ethos, basically, these corporations and the heads of them, right? But anyway, so that's Beijing for you right there. Or sorry, Hong Kong. Well, it's Beijing doing it ultimately, right? All right. So I wanted to cover a little bit too on the COVID vax. We haven't actually talked about that in a while. And of course, this is continued. Obviously, nothing has changed here. I think we talked last Friday before we took a little break here that they approved it from 6-month-year-olds up to 5 years old, and this is moving ahead. And it's next Tuesday. Actually, it was yesterday. Sorry, it was yesterday, 21st on the summer solstice that they began this program and buying all these new shots to be given to the kids and stuff like that. And by the way, we'll probably do something Friday, a little bit midsummer oriented. We didn't do that yet, so we missed Juneteenth, and then yesterday the summer solstice. But you know, officially we celebrate midsummer on the Friday following the summer solstice, so that'll be on Friday. So we'll do something then, I think, for the Flashback Friday show. By the way, if you're wondering, but here was an interesting piece here too. We linked it up on our Telegram. Check this out here. COVID-19 vaccination, BNT162B2, that's the what the biological, what do they call it again? License product or whatever they call it. Comiturn, was that what it was called? Comiturn. That got this number, I believe. Temporarily impairs semen concentration and total motile count among semen donors. Now, note temporarily, because I think that's also the only reason they say temporarily, because they don't have any long-term studies on it. Here's the abstract here. Or is it a capsule? Is that what they call it now? I thought it was just abstract. Capsule, a retrospective longitudinal multi-center comparison, reveals temporary sperm concentration reduction 3 months post-COVID-19 vaccination and later recovery. Yeah, that's still, I think, up in the air, to be honest. Semen volume and motility remain stable. Oh, good. Background, the development of COVID-19 vaccinations represents a notable sign to... Oh, here we go. First, you have to explain how great they are and how safe and effective they are. Nevertheless, concerns have been raised regarding their possible detrimental impact on male fertility. It's funny how, like, the memes that come out, like, after the first couple of days, things are known. What was it, like, pure blood sperm will be the new Bitcoin or something? Well, that's, I mean, Bitcoin is kind of, hey, any crypto bros out there, it's a good time. It's a good buy price right now. But anyway, you get the idea, right? Usually that's the case. Usually you can actually get more truth from, like, early memes about something than you can actually get, and then, like, months later, and then, you know, the rehashing and back and forth and stuff. And it's not that this is just pulled out of someone's ass. It's, like, you know, based on stuff. It's based on studies, early knowledge, or just observing what's going on, essentially, early reports and stuff like that, right? All right, so anyway, we don't have to go into this. I think, as I said, the temporarily impairs aspect of this could definitely be questioned. Many have talked about far more, you know, involved and knowledgeable in the science behind this mRNA shot, this experimental technology, of just how detrimental this is going to be to fertility, not only for males, but also for women, as we've seen. So here's all of our favorite CEO here, Albert Bourla from Pfizer, talking about, once again, we've covered this now endless many times, they keep rehashing these things, that we are going to have to take one dose at least once a year.
Your company, with your partner BioNTech and Moderna, the other company, have both pioneered the use of messenger RNA, which can easily be reprogrammed every time the spike protein of a coronavirus evolves or changes. Do you think we're going to get updated mRNA vaccines every season that'll be directed to each new variation of the coronavirus? And will we have to take those shots every year?
I'm almost certain about it. I say almost certain because, of course, regulators have the final say in all of that. But that's the beauty of mRNA. You can adapt your vaccine just by changing the sequencing, which is a very minor change, either manufacturing or in the properties of the vaccine, safety or efficacy, but can make a huge difference in the way that responds to the virus. So for this reason, I'm very confident that we'll be able to respond very, very fast to every new variant.
All right, let's turn to Mike Barnicle, who had a...
So there you go. At least one every year. So I thought, you know, this, it feels like it's kind of settled down a little bit, but the fact is, no. This is going to be pushed, I think, even harder as we're going to... I thought first maybe summer, but for some reason there's so many other, you know, things in the air, so maybe politically, maybe it might not be that advantageous. People have speculated, come midterm elections in the U.S., then they're going to, you know, wheel this out, and, you know, we're going to be back to mail-in ballots and all that kind of shit again. We'll just see, right? But there is data out already, of course. And here's a summary. I mean, I think most watching, all of you basically know this. And I mean, if there's anyone around you that's still considering giving this to their children or to their to anybody in your family, doesn't matter who, you have to keep sending them this kind of material and show them that this is like this, you are going to be impaired, or maybe even you might even die when you take this stuff. Why? Because that's the plan. It's a big depopulation gay-op as they make money on us on the way out. That's basically what it is, right? it's also a little bit about kind of customizing humans to this new mRNA technology. That's certainly a kind of a Rubicon that was crossed, which I think was beneficial to them. So now you'll just see, you know, a slew of medications. They're going to be around this new technology, and it's all going to be like, we'll just fix your DNA. We'll update it. We'll change these things, whatever problem you have, right? But so anyway, for the kids, right? The trial for the kids are an absolute sham, right? Absolute, just bogus science. The complete, all of it is known. All of it is out in the open. And people are still pretending that this is, like, you know, safe and effective, right? So here's a short summary here. This is Dr. Claire Craig from the UK talking about this, of just these so-called clinical trials and the data there that they used to justify the continued injection going down in the ages, now from 6 months up to 5 years. So listen to what she says here.
I chair the heart group, and I want to take you through the evidence that Pfizer just presented to the FDA on the 6 month to 4-year-old children. There's an awful lot about this trial that has shocked me, and I think will shock you too. The trial recruited 4,526 children aged from 6 months to 4 years old. 3,000 of these children did not make it to the end of the trial. That is a huge number, two-thirds of them. Why was there this drop-off? That needs to be answered. And without an answer to that, on that basis alone, this trial should be deemed null and void. So what did the trial show? Well, they defined severe COVID as children who had a slightly raised heart rate or a few more breaths per minute. There were 6 children aged 2 to 4 who had severe COVID in the vaccine group, but only 1 in the placebo group. So on that basis, the likelihood that this vaccine is actually causing severe COVID is higher than the likelihood that it isn't. There was actually 1 child who was hospitalized in this trial. They had a fever and a seizure. They had been vaccinated. So now let's turn to what they defined as any COVID. And what they did was to utterly twist the data. They vaccinated the children and they waited 3 weeks after the first dose before the second dose. In that 3-week period, 34 of the vaccinated children got COVID and only 13 in the placebo group, which worked out as a 30% increased chance of catching COVID in that 3-week period if you were vaccinated. So they ignored that data. And then there was an 8-week gap between the second dose and the third dose, where again, children were getting plenty of COVID in the vaccine arm. So they ignored that data. There was then 7 weeks after the third dose, which they also ignored, which meant that in the end, they had ignored 97% of the COVID that occurred during the trial. And they just looked at tiny numbers, so tiny. In the end, they were comparing 3 children in the vaccine arm who had COVID with 7 in the placebo arm. And they said that this showed the vaccine was effective. So they measured how many of these children actually managed to catch COVID twice in the 2-month follow-up period. And there were 12 children who had COVID twice, and all but 1 of them were vaccinated, mostly with 3 doses. So you have to wonder what on earth they're thinking when the claim of reduction in COVID was only 4 children. And here we have 12 children who got COVID twice, 11 of them vaccinated. So let's just recap. They recruited 4,500 children, 3,000 of them dropped out. And in the end, they're claiming this vaccine works on the basis of 3 COVID cases versus 7, a difference of 4 children only.
Good
and
science,
all of
everyone.
This on a backdrop of a disease which doesn't affect children and with no long-term safety data. We have to ask how an ethics committee could have approved this trial in babies.
How is
babies
it possible?
Are not at risk from COVID. And now we have Pfizer, who are presenting this as evidence to the FDA in order to apply for an emergency use authorization. Emergency use authorization is meant for a situation where there's a risk of serious injury or death. Now, children under 5 are not at risk of serious injury or death from COVID. In fact, in their own trial, they had to make up other ways of measuring the problem because there was no serious injury or death. Now, originally, these products were sold as actually also reducing transmission. Now, it would be completely unethical to use young children as a human shield But we now know that they don't reduce transmission. The WHO have stopped claiming and they reduce transmission. So that argument doesn't apply either. Now, if we just turn to safety, what they did is they followed up the patients for 6 weeks before unblinding them.
Yep, unblinding.
And vaccinating
remember this?
Them. So the children who'd had placebo, the control group, were followed up for an average of 6 weeks and then given the vaccine. So that's your safety control gone forever. The
Very
fact
convenient.
That this trial existed at all is unbelievable. There are other issues in there which I haven't highlighted, but those are the key ones. Parents should be demanding that the decision makers explain themselves.
Well, they won't, and they're accountable to nobody unless, of course, you don't take it. That's what you can do at this point, not to take it and protest it. But yeah, there's a lot of people that buy this, and they think it's rigorous science, and it's just as usual. But for some reason, look, I'm not saying that there hasn't been issues before. There certainly has. The big pharma is a huge problem. It's been corrupted from its inception. But even like anything that was there as a kind of little safety mechanism has just basically gone out the window with COVID, and especially with the rollout of this shot from Pfizer and Moderna and some of the other companies. And so this, they unblind them, they remove that control group, and so now you can't follow them long-term, you don't know what permanent damages they're going to have, right? So couple that with, like, all this crazy stuff, and we have a little segment on that later, with, like, you know, all the groomers and stuff that are, you know, helping to transition kids and stuff like this, right? I think we're looking at a tsunami of, like, fertility issues down the road. It remains to be seen how many people are not going to do this and how many just, you know, normal pure blood individuals that are a little bit more critical remain after everything is said and done. But as I said, we haven't begun to see the initial like wave of deaths yet, but I think that is going to happen at some point. And now that when they're starting it with the kids, again, this is yesterday, doing this with the kids, these people need to be, they need to be taken care of. They need to be held accountable and responsible. And we need to have trials, and these people need to be punished. That's the only way out of this situation. There's really no other way moving forward from this. But of course, you know, again, coupled with the economic collapse that they're doing now, the bringing in all these other, you know, CBDCs and all that stuff, it's a good chance that this will just be buried in an avalanche of like other issues, right? All right. Anyway, I saw this too, and I think they have this technology already. We've talked about this a few times, but. Contagious vaccines, right? It's basically self-spreading vaccines. There's a couple of different terms for it. I think that this is the case already. I think shedding is a problem. I think people who haven't taken the vaccine but are in close proximity to those who have, I guess depending on what stage they are in the production of this protein, right? They can get exposed to it too, right? So there's a warning here from nexusnewsfeed.com. Contagious vaccines. A warning. Let me make that a little bit bigger here. For two decades, scientists have been quietly developing self-spreading contagious vaccines. The NIH funded this research in which either DNA from a deadly pathogen is packed in a contagious but less harmful virus, or the deadly virus's lethality is weakened by engineering it in a lab. The resultant vaccines spread from one person to the next, just like a contagious respiratory virus. Only 5% of regional populations would need to be immunized. The other 95% would catch the vaccine as it spreads person to person through community transmission. This technology bypasses the inconvenience of recalcitrant. What the hell is that? Fancy word there, recalcitrant citizens who may refuse to give consent. I would assume just those who don't want it. It advocates highlight that a mass vaccination campaign that would ordinarily take months of expensive effort to immunize everyone could be shortened to only a few weeks. Scientists have already shown proof of concept in animal populations. In 2000, Spanish researchers injected 70 rabbits with a transmissible vaccine and returned them to the wild, where they quickly passed the vaccine onto hundreds more, reportedly stopping a viral outbreak. European countries are now testing this technology on pigs. In the wake of the COVID pandemic, About a dozen research institutions in the U.S., Europe, and Australia are investigating the potential human uses for self-spreading vaccines. The Federal Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, for example, is examining this technology for U.S. military to protect against the West Africa Lassa fever, a virus spread by rats to humans. This project, it should be noted, does not require the consent of our military servicemen and women. And how do you stop it there also, right? That's kind of, anyway. In 2019, the UK government began exploring this technology to address the seasonal flu. A research paper from Britain's Department of Health and Social Care advises that university students could be an obvious target group. They do not work, so vaccinating them will not cause much economic disruption, and most have second homes to go to, thereby spreading the vaccines, or the vaccine. Researchers admitted a contagious vaccine for an attenuated flu virus would cause some deaths, but estimate these would be less than the original influenza virus. Only when you go to mRNA technology, it's something different, right? And as the UK government report described, self-spreading vaccines are less lethal, but not non-lethal. They can still kill. Some people will die who would otherwise have lived, though few people die overall. So it's worth it. For the greater good, we have to develop these self-spreading vaccines. As the saying goes, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. Or in Lenin's formulation, if you're going to chop down a forest, then wood chips will fly. Contagious vaccines are in our future, their champion claims, and are no different than putting fluoride in the drinking water. Good reminder. Plus, those who find the jabs unpleasant, there are fewer needles required. Government-funded research of lab-engineered viruses to create contagious, self-spreading vaccines that bypass the consent of citizens. What could possibly go wrong? That's right. So now you know. That's what it's all about right there. Just no consent. You just don't even know what you've been given. You could argue that there's programs already running in that department, right? Geoengineering, solar geoengineering, pulling carbon out of the atmosphere, right? Some people say the so-called chemtrails are part of that program as well, of basically just inflicting a dubious scientific idea onto billions of people without them knowing what's going on, right? That's the name of the game. All right. Let me go over to this a little bit. We have some stuff here about the so-called refugee situation, the migrant situation. And we talked about a story a while back where basically Ukrainian women in Sweden were encouraged to kind of adhere to the dress code that would fit better for the Muslims in the asylum center, right? So now we have something coming out of Denmark here as well. Actually, let me go to the translated version of this here. Ukrainian women call the Danish asylum centers more insecure, I mean more dangerous, really, than the bombs in Kyiv. Several Ukrainian women with children are now criticizing the insecure conditions at a Danish asylum center. They talk about drugs, alcohol, and threatening behavior. And then they go through a case where they basically, like, someone has broken their window, right? They broke their window, threw a stone in there. I wish we could watch the video. Let me listen to this real quick here. See what she.
Ехали в Данию. Нам сказали, что это одна из самых безопасных стран. Я боюсь здесь больше за своего ребенка, чем когда мы сидели в бомбоубежище в Киеве.
Yes, basically. More dangerous in Denmark than it is in Kyiv with the bombs going off right now. That's what she what she's saying there. Short but sweet. There you go. All right. So it's funny how we don't really get too much of this anymore, right? The issue with the migration crisis and so forth. Like, this is not something that's like stopped. It's still continuing. The only difference is now we have like Ukrainians coming into that mix and stuff where they are having experiences. And some of these, of course, they cover more so than they would cover if it happens to the local native population. But a couple of videos here for you. Check this out. Here is let's play this one. This is, speaking of the refugee, check out, this was a good one from the UK, going around to a refugees welcome parade, whatever you want to call it, but demonstration, asking them if they're willing to take in a refugee.
I just noticed your placard saying refugees welcome here.
Yes.
I'm just wondering if you'd like to go down on a list saying you're willing to take the refugees into your home.
Of course so. The only problem is I rent.
You rent?
Yeah.
Maybe an issue?
Yeah, because they've got, well, they've put 9 bedrooms in a 4-bedroom house, so we're pretty much jam-filled.
So, since you actually adopt a refugee and take him into your home?
Well, if I had any space, I
if
would.
If you had
but
any
yeah,
space.
It wouldn't be
right.
A nice place to bring them because
yeah.
It's a bit overcrowded. Right. But yes, if I had the space, definitely.
Thank you very much for that, love. Pop one into your home.
I live in a rental place, so I can't.
Rental?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone else's job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, I can't.
You can't take one.
I don't have a space.
Don't have the space.
We'll
have a refugee stay at your house.
Yeah, I don't mind.
You go on the list?
I don't mind, yeah. I can't take another thing. Oh, wait, I can't, because my house is only a little small. And
amazing. Now, would you be willing to have a refugee in your home?
Yes, if I had room.
If you had room, it's funny that. To adopt a refugee?
No, thank you.
No, thank you. Any reason in particular?
I don't. What sort of refugee are you talking about?
Excuse me. Would you be willing to adopt a refugee into your home?
No.
No.
Sorry, I can't.
Would you adopt a refugee into your home?
No, thank you.
No? No. Adopt a refugee?
I would be willing, yeah, if I had the space.
If you had the space.
Yeah.
So, where should we put them then?
Where should we put them?
Yeah.
There's plenty of people who have got it.
Who are you, mate?
My name's Jim, who are you?
My name's Alistair. I'm already adopted a refugee, thanks.
What does racism mean to you?
It means not equality for those who don't can't belong here.
For those that don't belong here?
Yeah.
Amazing.
big surprise. I think one of the first one we saw was like one of the Swedish outlets, wasn't it? Ads just going out and asking them, like, would you take it? Oh, I have. It's a little tight in my home. Okay, but so someone else needs to take it in. What is it now in Britain? Is it 68 million? What is it? Something like that? Like it's a small island? Let me just check that real quick. How many people is it in UK? Let me see. What do we have here? Yeah, 67.22 million as of 2022, right? So we open borders, let them all in, and propagate to promote that idea. Let's you know, convince everyone to open the doors of the country. But then as soon as you end up in the spotlight where you're like, well, now you actually have to help out here then and take these people. Remarkably, no one wants them, even the very people that are advocating for us to take them in. Fascinating how that works, isn't it? It's always the same thing. It's like vastly overpopulated in the UK. Fuck, I mean, heading towards 70 million, that's crazy, considering the size of Britain, right? So here's some other footage for you here to enjoy. This is some classic here, right? Lone white guy, a European Western man, finding himself on the streets. This is in Spain here, being attacked and robbed by migrants. The first one here is a pack of Moroccan migrants that are robbing and attacking and beating a man in Huelva in Spain. Check this out here. It's like they're pack animals. Look at that. And actually, we have some more from Spain. It's back to the refugee footage here, but or the pro-refugee footage. It's funny how they don't talk about that. They don't talk about the consequence of what happens when we let these people in. And the packs and their and eventually their kids that are forming criminal gangs to rape and attack our people, right? Here's another one. Migrants attack a white guy in Louvette de Mar, I think it is. What is it? De Mar, like by the ocean, probably, or something like that. Lorette del Mar, De Mar, in Spain. As you can see, he's like probably drunk, the guy, right?
Yeah.
Welcome to Europe, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to your rape. All right, and now we're to Germany here. This is your average public bath now, June 2022. Not sure what it is with these people in like public bathhouses and stuff like this. Is this the what's the term, latent homosexuality weaved into the cultural fabric or something, right? They love their bathhouses. Remember all the groping that's happened at these bathhouses and stuff like that? There you go. That's Germany for you right there. Wonderful. I see one German guy in there. You know what? I think it's a good idea about now. I think it would be great if we can if we kind of can find something to kind of fight over, like some kind of factional issue, right? To the like religion or spirituality, and then we could break up as white people in as many factions as possible, and we can bicker about those things and get and see your neighbors as the biggest problems, right? That's really good strategy when you're facing this in most Western countries. I think that would be a smart move moving forward, right? Let's fight with the pagans, right? Let's bicker over religion or some shit like that. Let's pray the gay away. Let's see how that works out. I think that's that would be a clear positive strategy moving forward for us to deal with this kind of issue, right? But evidently people are way too comfortable. And it's not big enough of a threat yet, I assume. I'm not sure what percentile that's going to be put to the side. 10% of the population, 5. Can we get 20? Can we get 40 maybe? We'll see. It remains to be seen. But clearly, white people are not uncomfortable enough to understand that these people do not give a shit what you think, what you pray to, who the... whatever the fucking shit little minute detail that you can find and bicker over, they're going to come after you regardless. Like, they see white, they don't care what the denomination you are or whatever dumb shit that you, like, obsess about. All right? All right, Bill Hoover, I didn't mention EntropyStream. EntropyStream.live/RedIceTV if you want to join us. Let me play that wonderful footage again for you there so you can mull over that here. Bill Hoover says... in the city of Sacramento, the city is giving any employer full reimbursements of their salary if you employ an Afghan refugee. Really, now, that's fascinating. Here's the Sacramento website here. Thank you, Bill. Interesting. Refugee Resources, Department of Health Services. Let me see what Bill here says. Meanwhile, the homeless have completely taken over the city. Yeah, well, that's the way to do it, right? Just help out with the refugee problem. then it's gonna be that's gonna work out. It's gonna do great for the economy too. We have an issue on that, or like that. Just it's coming apart. Okay, it's falling apart at the seams, and shit's going down. Because that's what they want. That's the intention of the. It's like that's baked into the system. It's like failure. You know what I mean? So that they can move on and offer us the next exciting gamification of our monetary system. We'll get to that here a little bit later. I kind of got that in the wrong order, I guess, because I wanted to show you the Ukrainian story, right, of what happened in Denmark. over the issue with the migrants there and the asylum problem. And now apparently there's actually been fights in, or chaos, I guess is a better term, chaos in the Italian parliament over continued support for Ukraine, or at least in terms of handing over weapons to Zelensky, right? So let's take a look at that footage. It's kind of interesting. I'm not sure which party it is. Maybe it's like the Five Star Movement. Maybe someone had more details on who it is exactly that's protesting this the most. But it says here, chaos erupts over in Italy over continued military support for Ukraine with members of the ruling coalition. Okay, ruling, there you go. Walking out saying no more weapons to Zelensky. Polls show the vast majority of people in Italy want a peace deal, but technocratic Prime Minister Draghi insists that the arms must flow. There you go. That's good. It's some pushback, right? What was it? Even the New York Times, I think, was like admitting it, right? Like, are we at war in Ukraine? I think it was a New York Times headline here just like a day or two ago, which is kind of interesting. And of course, the answer is yes. it's a proxy war, no doubt. However, if we talk about the economy in Ukraine, it was a big admission here by, the Fed chair, what's his name? Powell, I think it was, right? Admitting, remember, it's the Putin price hike, and the only reason why things are doing bad on the economy and the energy and stuff like that is because of Russia's war in Ukraine. But apparently he admitted here that it is not the driver of inflation. Listen to this.
But Powell, I realize there are a number of factors that play a role in the historic inflation that we're experiencing. Supply chain disruptions, regulations that constrain supply. We've got rising inflation expectations and excessive fiscal spending, but the problem hasn't sprung out of nowhere. And in January of 2021, inflation was at 1.4%. By December of 2021, it had risen to 7%, a five-fold increase. Now, since the war in Ukraine began in late February, the rate of inflation has risen incrementally another 1.6%. to a current level of 8.6%. So again, from 7% to 8.6%. Given how inflation has escalated over the past 18 months, would you say that the war in Ukraine is the primary driver of inflation in America?
No, inflation was high before, certainly before the war in Ukraine broke out.
I'm glad to hear you say that. The Biden administration seems to be intent on deflecting blame, and as recently as just this past Sunday, spread the misinformation that Putin's invasion of Ukraine is the, quote, biggest single driver of inflation. I'm glad you agree with me that that is not the truth.
Of course it's not the truth, but it's good when you get it in black and white from the supposed people that are responsible for doing this to us. And here's the new press secretary talking about how there is no recession. It's just a transition. They keep pushing this line. Listen to this.
The president said last week that there's no inevitability around a recession, but there is a greater deal of market concern about exactly that. And I know that inflation is your number one concern, but can you talk a little bit about if you're doing anything at all to prevent a recession or a rise in unemployment?
So the way that we see this, and you've heard us talk about this, that we're in a moment of transition. We are in a unique situation with our with the historical gains with our economy. The way that we see it is unemployment rate.
Historic gains with our economy, ladies and gentlemen. That's the official White House position.
Has held steady at 3.6, which is also near historic lows. Business investment remains strong. Household balance sheets remain strong. There was an analysis that came out recently that showed middle-class Americans had an additional $10,000 in savings then before the pandemic. Another analysis found that all income groups had higher checking account balances at the end of March than they had pre-pandemic. So we see that the strengths that we, our economic strength that we have seen from this past year, from the action that the president has taken with the American Rescue Plan, with what we have seen with the historical gains, that historical is going to help us deal with a recession. Right now, we don't see a recession right now. That is not, we're not in a recession right now. Right now, we're in a transition where we are going to go into a place of stable and steady growth, and that's going to be that's going to be our focus.
Just keep lying as long as possible, and even beyond the point of when it's inevitable, they still keep lying. No, it's not really happening. It's not. And if it is happening, it's actually pretty good, right? It's LA Times. So yes, the recession looks inevitable, but it may not be that bad. That's right. Here's why. It might not be that bad. We're actually doing great. In fact, you complaining on it is the problem. Remember earlier we talked about the situation with the black the power hairpin and stuff like that, right? There's still work to do. Here's a member of that community showing up and saying we should not complain. Do not complain. You still have your job, and nothing's going to happen. Listen to this. Here's MSNBC.
Where we are right now.
You know, I'm just going to say this, and if I get banged for it, I don't care. There is a great deal of Americans where it is uncomfortable that they're spending more, but they are not going to go under. You know, you got to stop complaining.
And how do you know that, genius?
When there's so many people who literally the inflation rate means they may only have two meals instead of three. There are Americans.
They're just missing a meal a day. Just no lunch for your kids. It's not that bad. Stop complaining, you white supremacists.
Who did extremely well in the last 2 years in the market. You still have your job. And yeah, it's costing you more.
No one has lost their job.
More for gas, but guess what? You're still going to take that holiday, that 4th of July vacation. You can still eat out. So I'm going to need you to calm down.
4th of July, you can still eat out. There you go. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Black and white right there.
And back off, because it feeds into this fear, and then this fear feeds into people making decisions that creates the very thing that they're fearful of.
That's right. It's just in your head. If you just ignore all of this, then it will go away. that's how it works. It's the what is it called? The secret. It's like this. I mean, you could say that's modern monetary theory in a way. It's like a new age, the secret. What was it called? The power of the law of attraction, and just wish that you want to look. There's something, of course, in visualizing and helping to put yourself in a frame of mind in order to see opportunities, as opposed to being defeatist and giving up and not seeing anything. Sure, that's a small part of the equation. I recognize that. But this is no, stop complaining. You're still eating twice a day. You can still eat two times a day. It's not that bad, right? You know, there'll be one maybe tomorrow, but that's fine, you know. Masix Gorillion over on Entropy Stream says, what the hell is that on Karine Jean-Pierre's head? Yeah, was she from Haiti, right? She's from Haiti. The mop?
Yeah.
The president said last week that...
You're talking about the mop, the dirty mop on the tip? I'm beyond disgusted when I see that stuff. Masix Gorillion says. Flying Dutchman says... Let me see, did I lower that? Yes, I did. Flying Dutchman says the White House press secretary should just shut up and dance the stanky leg. It would be more fitting role for her. Is that a specific dance? I'm not familiar with that. The stanky leg. I remember seeing the Charleston for the first time. Remember that? I think it was like considered to be super vulgar or something, right? Charleston dance. Let me see if I can find that real quick. Is it 20s? 1920s? Yeah, here we go. Let me see if I can find. Is there some old footage of this here? Oh, this is like, okay, I thought it was actual. Charleston dance. Do they actually do it here? Let me see if they do it. It was like vulgar. It was like jarring with your body or something. No, this is not the footage I was looking for. It's like in Dance Craze. All right, whatever. The Roaring Twenties. That's what it was anyway. maybe it's close to that one. I'm not sure. Anyway, yeah, with that mop, you can't go wrong. Thank you, guys. Flying Dutchman, Masix Gorillion, Bill Hoover. Appreciate it. So, let's go back to the economy. issue here for a little bit. So, of course, as we said, it isn't happening. But then when it is happening, it's actually good. But we do have a little video here quickly to show you what actually has happened since January 2020 when it comes to inflation. Look at this video here. So they're listing down below here for the podcast audience. Gas, wheat, corn, cotton, oil, coffee, sugar, butter, cheese, and orange juice. Why orange juice, by the way? And we're seeing the price changes in those since January 2020. And we're up in April 2021 now. And of course, we're seeing, up and down a little bit, but as much as 40, 50% rise as we're getting closer to 2022. Gas, of course, winning out completely. I think we're seeing a 200-300% increase here. There we go. 200. Where are we? 200 increase in gas. 233.5% increase in gas prices since January 2020. A 111% increase in wheat. 103% increase in corn, 100% increase in cotton, 77% increase in oil, 57 with coffee, 48, almost 49 in sugar, 44.5 with butter, and 30.6 in cheese. And for some reason, the OJ, shout out to the OJ community there, the orange juice drinkers, I'm not one of those, you have gotten a good discount, 30%. Down on OJ. But, it's totally not happening. But if it's happening, it's actually good because, well, we want you to spend less anyway. And furthermore, what about the central bank digital currency that we want to bring in the wake of this? Well, here's what Fed Chair Powell had to say about that. In order to preserve the power of the dollar, we have to make it digital and tie it to a digital currency that the central bank oversees.
Looking forward, rapid changes are taking place in the global monetary system that may affect the international role of the dollar in the future. Most major economies already have or are in the process of developing instant 24/7 payments. Our own FedNow service will be coming online in 2023. And in light of the tremendous growth in crypto assets and stablecoins, we are examining whether a U.S. central bank digital currency would improve upon what is an already safe and efficient domestic payment system. As our white paper on this topic notes, a U.S. CBDC could also potentially help maintain the dollar's international standing.
Wonder who told you about this about 2 years ago or something like that, right? Now it's happening. It's all rolled out. It's all ready to go. And now they're using this as an opportunity. Well, to ensure the stability of the U.S. dollar and the value, we just have to turn it into a central bank digital currency, and then we can program the money and tell you what you can and can't buy for that, right? It's going to be great. It's going to be perfect. You guys see this one, too? This is The Economist, right? We talk about them often. Rothschild publication. Why Satan should share your meetings. Let me read that again. Why Satan should share your meetings. A literature loves guide to office politics. I didn't go through. I got it. You got to have an archived version to go through the whole thing. I haven't done that yet, but it's just a little bit of those we get. Remember, was it the Economist last time? We got the death on the. Yes, it was the Economist. Remember that? They usually do these things. They love their magazine covers, right? We've talked about Time does this. What's the big ones? Time, maybe National Geographic occasionally, but usually it's. Usually it's The Economist, Time, and a couple of others, right? The coming food catastrophe. It's almost like they know somehow. It's very strange how that works. Okay. So back on track here. We have Flying Dutchman here saying, perhaps the White House secretary will talk about the price increase of cotton. That's right. What do we have it at the end there? Let me go back and check that. 100% increase. That's right. Well, that's racist. We just wait until the automation shows comes around here and we get not only cotton picking robots, but literally everything. I'm not sure they'll get there, but they're definitely going to try. They're going to try to make you obsolete. Maybe that's why they want rid of so many people. Who knows at this point, right? But again, it's definitely not happening. As JP Morgan lays off hundreds of employees in mortgage division as rates spike. JP Morgan Chase is laying off employees this week in response to the spike in mortgage rates that has rocked the housing market. This is not 2008. This is, I don't know, 1920s maybe level, maybe even worse. Our staffing decision this week was a result of cyclical changes in the mortgage market, JP Morgan said in a statement. Hundreds of employees will be laid off while hundreds of others will be reassigned. A person familiar with the matter told CNN Business. News of the layoffs was first reported by Bloomberg News. We were able to proactively move many impacted employees to new roles within the firm and are working to help them to help the remaining affected employees find new employment within Chase and externally, JP Morgan said in a statement. The layoffs underscore the wide-reaching impact of the Federal Reserve's shift to inflation-fighting mode. Yeah, like that's what they're about. Mortgage rates are rising at the fastest pace since 1987 as the Fed moves aggressively to tame inflation. It's not going to work. It's not the point. Not only is that hurting demand for new mortgages, but it's hitting the lucrative refinancing business too. What, quantitative easing? What do they call it? This mumbo-jumbo financial tricks, right? I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know. It's just, there's no fixing this. We've talked about the debt level and the scale and, you know, It's not meant to be fixed. Not meant to be fixed. I'm sure at some point there'll be a housing crash. So we'll see what the reception is at that point of these people. But I mean, anyone who has their finger on the pulse knows what is coming. And in fact, it's already happening to some countries. Right now, Sri Lanka has basically collapsed economically. And of course, it begins with countries maybe that don't have the most economic stable circumstances to begin with. But here's what Sky News had to say about it.
Breaking news, actually. I'm bringing in tomorrow in just a second. But Sri Lanka's prime minister, apparently he has said that the troubled economy of Sri Lanka, as you know, we've been covering that story here on Sky News. There has been some significant unrest, and including burning down buildings. He's now telling us that the economy has collapsed, with the country unable to pay for oil imports. What's going to happen as a result of that? Beautiful island, of course, Sri Lanka, very rich and varied, but big economic problems at the moment, and the economy, we're told, has collapsed, with the country unable to pay for oil imports. Get more on that and update you in just...
Yeah, there you go. Sri Lankan Prime Minister, island's economy has collapsed. I haven't seen this one. No, not that one. Not yet. Sri Lanka's Prime Minister says economy faces complete collapse. Leader prepares for country for possible austerity measures amid negotiations for an... Drum roll, please. We got to have that on. IMF bailouts. There we go. That's going to do it. Just get those claws from the IMF in you. That'll do it. Let me check out this video here.
The anger has certainly been boiling. The economic situation in Sri Lanka is really dire. Protests have really intensified in recent weeks. Police have resorted to opening fire to disperse protesters, resulting in one protester being killed and a dozen injured as well. The economic crisis is impacting people from pretty much all walks of life. There have been blanket power outages across the nation, critical shortages of really basic things. If you look at what's happened in Sri Lanka, it's an example of how quickly things can go wrong if governments don't get on top of that quickly.
Yeah, it's like this is the Wall Street Journal saying, you got to give us all your the full control here so we can save you from the coming collapse, economically speaking. That's going to do it. Just trust more, right?
People are really struggling to make ends meet. You know, having to line up for hours on end to just try and get a lot of things from fuel to cooking gas. Inflation as a whole, it's well into the double digits. It's about 18% last month. Food price inflation hit 30% in February. There's a particular shortage in diesel. Bus services have had to be suspended for days at a time. So certainly the war in Ukraine has served to exacerbate inflation.
There we go, blame Putin, there we go.
Sri Lanka does import a fair bit of wheat from both Russia and Ukraine, and the sort of pressure on global supply chains have only served to add to those inflationary pressures.
Yeah, the
Sri Lanka has always
unnecessary lockdowns had absolutely nothing to do with that, and we shouldn't hold any of those people responsible. Nor the people toying with our economies, but you know, that's details.
Tourism industry as a key foreign currency earner that was really hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic, but really the situation had already been rather dire for Sri Lanka in the years leading up to the pandemic because it had accumulated large amounts of debt. Sri Lanka has borrowed quite extensively from China, spending on ambitious infrastructure projects. Last week, it's the first time it's ever defaulted on its debt. Basically, they've run low on US dollars and other foreign currency to pay for basic imports. Protesters have also been very unhappy about the way the government has handled the economic crisis and really trying to muddle their way through with short fixes. Until recently, they had refused to, for example, to go to the IMF for help.
Because that would do it.
Sri Lanka can be a useful case study for emerging market countries in particular who may have also racked up significant levels of debt and are now facing high levels of inflation because of everything that's going around in the world with global supply chains choked up and commodity prices soaring. It goes to show that black swan events coupled with some perhaps ill-judged policy decisions and all
perhaps,
of a sudden...
Perhaps ill-judged policy decisions, yeah.
Situation.
All right, anyway, maybe not the most exciting report, but what are you going to do? Yes, what do we have? Almost 22 million people in Sri Lanka. It's the island off of, adjacent to India, right? Yeah, that's right, yep. Okay, all right. So that's what you're going to see start happening. And then, of course, as that rollout happens, you're going to see other kind of excuses and like, well, we have to reform your system. If they get into an IMF, there'll be digital currencies in the wake of that, right? All those kinds of things. Ice Age Farmer shared this, which is kind of interesting, regarding Sri Lanka, how the government gave public sector workers Fridays off for the next 3 months so that they can turn to farming to ease a food shortage. The four-day week will also reduce commuting, easing pressure on limited fuel supplies. The UN warned that Sri Lanka is facing a humanitarian catastrophe as it deals with its biggest economic shock since independence in 1948. Was it from British independence, I would assume, or something, right? Or was it from India or something? I don't know. Anyway. Okay. So there you go. So we had layoffs, right? We had JP Morgan. We talked about that. JP Morgan layoffs. And we also had, where is that story? This one, which is kind of interesting. Texas in a different direction here. But speaking of layoffs, Elon Musk said he had a bad feeling about the economy. He started booting people from Tesla. I think there were some from SpaceX too. I'm a little more uncertain of that. But Tesla was getting some people getting the boot. But apparently now, there's some of the heads of the activist groups internally in these companies that have been fired, such as the head of LGBTQP+ and diversity lead. They have been fired amid Musk's woke mind virus concerns. Yeah, that's totally not happening, right? Tesla has laid off both the president of its LGBTQP+ community and a lead involved in diversity and inclusivity programs at the company. Why would you even have this to begin with? We know he's big on the ESG stuff, right? We've talked about this over and over. Complete lineup. Otherwise, right? He's not the rebel he kind of poses himself to be, right? That I saw this going around the other day. There's a version of this that we've seen before. We've shown, right? But from carbon tax to universal basic income to the vaccination issue over COVID to, you know, microchips and all that kind of stuff, right? It's fourth industrial revolution, great reset stuff all along the way. And he lines up with these people. But anyway, short term, maybe it's fun to look at. He's apparently been fighting with some people. Was it some DM between him and Bill Gates that were leaked the other day, or someone tweeted it out or something? We were taking a break then, so I didn't follow up on all that. But they're positioning him as kind of being like an outsider, like someone specifically like conservatives can look to, kind of like what they did with Trump. You know, so I'm certainly suspicious of him. But regardless, this is what it is. While they were let go as part of a broader wave of layoffs, it comes amid several comments Tesla's CEO Elon Musk made concerning what he describes as the woke mind virus. Earlier this month, we reported on Musk telling Tesla executives in an email that they need to cut 10% of the workforce and pause hiring due to having a super bad feeling about the economy. That's more than a feeling. Later, the CEO decided to clarify the Tesla layoffs in an email to all employees. He claimed that the 10% reduction would be for salaried headcount due to Tesla becoming overstaffed following a long growth phase. Tesla ramped up the layoffs last week, and we reported that unlike what Musk said, they did include hourly employees. Now we learn that many employees involved in diversity and inclusivity programs were part of the layoffs. Yeah, because clearly that's the most important position within a company. Including the president of Tesla's LGBTQ+P community and a lead involved in diversity and inclusivity programs at the company, according to a source familiar with the matter, Bobby Beretta Paris, a 5-year Tesla veteran, was let go last week. He was hired as a recruiter and promoted 3 times during his tenure. He was also the volunteer president of the LGBTQ+ at Tesla. What do they do there exactly? It's funny how they can have like little groups just, you know, advocating for them and who they are and all that stuff, right? When was the last time you saw like a white identity interest group in any company? I'm waiting. Send that to me. I'll review that for you. Sources also told Electrek about a software engineer who was also let go by Tesla last week. They had been working at Tesla for 4 years, most recently as a senior software engineer in charge of naming conventions in Tesla's vehicle UI team, and had been promoted 3 times. The software engineer volunteered as a diversity and inclusion leader and was involved in employee protection when it came to issues of diversity and inclusion. Look at this language. It's just blah. All right. Okay, well, I think that's that. They're just going through. Let me see what else. Talking about woke ideas. I guess that's bad that he's pointing that out then or something. Musk is dangerous. But yeah, someone said, what was it, the tweet he made fun of the Pride Month thing? And then, of course, they're doing this exactly same thing with Tesla. Why can't, if he wants to be different, or why can't he actually just do away with all these things altogether? Instead of just signaling about it on Twitter and then nothing happens, the same thing. Okay, so we have a couple of other issues here when it comes to the LGBTQ issue here. And this was a good one. I kind of missed my radar here first from Scientific American. Look at this. This is pretty crazy here. The first, and of course this is true, and this is what I tweeted out and talked about when it comes to the documentary that Matt Walsh did, What Is a Woman, right? That they left this little exciting tidbit out for some reason. The first gender affirmation surgeries took place in the 1920s during the Weimar era at a Berlin clinic that employed transgender technicians and nurses and was headed by a gay Jewish man. The Nazis destroyed it in their first book burning. And someone said, it was interesting replies to the good. Now I love Nazis. Stop making the Nazis look good. This is terribly irresponsible. Well, what are you talking about? This is, it's no lie right there. Most Americans are fine with sex change surgery for adults. Really? Okay. Whatever. It's surgery and puberty blockers for children that get everyone up in arms. Don't pretend people can't tell the difference. Well, it doesn't really matter if you're mind brainwashed into thinking that this is going to be a fix for your whatever it is, your problems, your gender dysphoria, whatever is going on, your chemical overload on estrogens. The right way is obviously not to surgically altering yourself. When you can, for example, just take more testosterone. If you're a male, if you're a biological male, go on testosterone. They'll make you feel more stable and better, right? It's not an ideal maybe thing, and maybe you could do it naturally and all these things, but hey, it is what it is. We've been unnaturally altered already, right? Lars Hagbeck says on Andrew, Twitter employees won't like this. Yeah, regarding Tesla, the Tesla thing. Yeah, it's funny how... what is it that there's a vote on this? See, I thought it was already like moving and like getting ready to close, but there's still the issue of the bots, I guess, for Elon to buy Twitter. And now people are claiming that he wants to try to get out of it or whatever. But yeah, Twitter is a major activist platform, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens if he actually does, if the deal actually does close. But yeah, they Twitter has been like one of the most vehement like pro-trans social, it's not that it's lacking on Facebook or YouTube, of course, but it's like over the top on Twitter on that issue, right? Anyway, so this is exactly what Lana had in her video, by the way. Check that out for not this one. I clicked in on the wrong one here. Where did it go here? Is it a few weeks ago? Where is it? No, that's the wrong one. Sorry, guys. Let me see here. Yeah, check that out. Let me just go in Lana's category here. But yes, we actually did cover that, unlike, here it is, right here. Unlike the Matt Walshes of this world, who will not cover the Weimar era, we're trying to just conveniently avoid that issue and say, well, there's two goys behind this. It's Alfred Kinsey and John Money, right? That's the only guys behind it. Not Magnus Hirschfeld, of course. It's nothing to do with this. Or some of the other guys. So anyway, check that out. It's a good video. Up right now, only on redicemembers.com, by the way, so it's a little bit of an exclusive over there. But yeah, so that's Scientific American kind of doing a little plug there, I guess, for like, those based book burnings. There you go. It's interesting when you ask, well, what books did they burn, right? Because, of course, they're burning books now. They're removing things. They're getting it fired, you know, booted off of Amazon. And, you know, if it's a book they don't like, there's this huge activist effort and push to get things offline or get, you know, so you can't print them or sell them, right? But there are some interesting developments on the trans front here, too. Swimming's world governing body slaps total ban on transgender athletes. They will have to compete in a separate category. Now, was that so hard? Was that really so hard? I mean, in a way, there's kind of a plus with keeping the circus going, to be honest. Now it could kind of placate some issues or some people that had an issue with this, perhaps. I'm not sure. Anyway, this is what they've done. Swimming's world governing body slapped a total ban on transgender athletes that have gone through any form of male puberty from taking part in women's competition. FINA, F-I-N-A, and their new policy, which was passed by a margin of 71% after its 152 members voted on the issue, will force transgender swimmers to compete in a separate category that only includes those who claim their gender identity is different from their biological sex. For transgender athletes who were born men to compete in women's events, they must have completed their transition by age 12. Still, that's all right. FINA president Hussein Al-Muzallam, does that have anything to do with a decision like that, said the vote was about protecting competitive fairness and the rights of athletes. All right. Okay, anyway, so that's good. I think long term, I think it's obviously good, but short term, yeah, maybe it's better to keep that circus going for a bit. And here's a sign in, was it New Jersey? Let me mute that here. Sign it telling identity confused kids, "I'm your mom now," sparks controversy. Oh, Wisconsin. I thought it was New Jersey. Okay. A sign posted at a Wisconsin high school told students, quote, "If your parents aren't accepting of your identity, I'm your mom now." And it has created controversy in the community. The post The poster includes the hashtag free mom hugs below, and it is adorned with the rainbow flag and shows a mama bear and her cubs. The latest incident has come to light after recent criticism from more than one school board candidate concerning teachers in the district being required to complete professional development training, which included taking a white privilege quiz. The poster was shared via tweet by Parents Defending Education, a nonprofit, national grassroots nonprofit, empowering parents to advocate for classrooms that educate, not indoctrinate. And here's the picture here. Check out this. There we go. If your parents aren't accepting of your identity, I'm your mom now. Here we go. We talked about that, how they want, they're coming for your kids. Well, that's, there you go. that's what we're talking about right there. Bypassing the parents and just going, you know, the secret, the closet, they go to school in your regular clothes, and then when you come to school, you can dress, as a tranny all day. And then you can put your regular clothes back on and go home. So that's what schools and school teachers are doing now, right? Terry Piper Thomas, communications manager at the Eau Claire Area School District, confirmed to Newsweek that the sign was posted on a door at the high school before it was taken down. Piper Thomas said she could not comment further. Prior to talking with her, Newsweek has reached out to the school's principal, Kurt Madsen. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. So anyway, they're your parents now. That's the bottom line. We will come for your kids, and we'll take over. We'll run them, right? Now, there was a good piece here, too. Let's see what time it is. I guess we could maybe read portions of it, but it was specifically a tweet in here that they linked up regarding there's been some posts on people that are basically regretting big shocker, right? They're regretting their so-called gender reassignment surgery, their mutilation. To put it bluntly, that them chopping off their genitals or making a version of a genital of that wasn't there prior, and just the problems that comes with that, which they don't tell you. But let me read a little bit from this, and then I'll show you that tweet, because it's pretty nasty stuff, believe it or not. Who knew that just opening a wound, cutting off your penis and opening a wound between your legs, it's kind of a difficult process. Anyway, the GOP's transgender strategy is dangerously off track. A potentially damaged, barely viable President Biden has surveyed the political landscape and incredibly chosen transsexualism as his field of battle. With inflation soaring, the economy collapsing, shortages ravaging America, a human invasion tsunami pouring over the border, and repeated international humiliations, Biden and his administration's flunkies are declaring an all-out war effort to promote transgenderism in every corner of America. Quote from The Hill here, President Biden is signing a sweeping new executive order on Wednesday that aims to protect LGBTQ plus P youth from a raft of conservative state laws and address barriers they face to health care and housing. The order aims to use the muscle of the federal government to push back on laws in states like Texas and Florida that have restricted access to health care for transgender. Well, that's not what that's OK. You know how they word this, right? Something happens, they can still go to hospital. That's not the end. They're just saying, we won't butcher you if you think you have, if you have a screw loose, we won't cut off your genitals. Okay, that's a service to you. But anyway, more on that later. And so, of course, they have also barred discussion in elementary schools about gender and sexual orientation. I don't think they have, but I think they have, there have been some effort to try to stop the propaganda and the promotion of it. Unfortunately, I think there's still discussion going on about those things. But anyway, the message of the president's new order is unambiguous. Absolute zero restrictions on bombarding children with morally degenerate sexual and gender propaganda and then permanently mutilate their genitals will be tolerated in Joe Biden's America. Joe Biden is certainly raising the stakes on transgenderism. The million-dollar question is, will the GOP fold? and let the Biden administration win and let every school in America become a transgenderism factory forever. Of course, they're folded on every damn issue, right? Yeah, there's a stone tossed a meme here. Democrats are the real racist. Neo-Leninists are the real transphobes. They're basically just 10 years behind, right? So, you know, this is probably, what's his name? Darren Beatty probably wrote this, right? So he has a finger on that pulse, at least, on how weak the GOP are. I mean, and not that we expect them to not be, I guess, but what's the point if you're literally not opposing anything that your political opponents are doing? Despite what DC consultants might tell you, Republicans should accept Biden's challenge. Until recently, the GOP's response to the transgender epidemic has been fearful, tepid, and timid. Republicans fear cancellation, they fear backlash from the extreme left, and they fear a replay of the fight over gay marriage from a decade ago. That's right. This fear must be banned. I mean, even Obama was like no to gay marriage during his first term, I believe, right? They wouldn't have been able to pull it off, but, you know, the intention was to do it later anyway. The fear must be banished. The Democratic campaign to abolish male and female and trannify America is something worth fighting against and worth doing so loudly and energetically. You know what I think? I think we should fight with white nationalists. That's in this era of them trying to take our kids, I think the most important thing is to fight with white nationalists or fight over the strategy of how we should defend our kids. Does that sound good to you? Yeah? Should we do that? Let's do that. That's a good idea, right? To downplay the issue is to decide that it is politically impossible to defeat this. There's a couple of tweets here. Drag queens make everything better. Drag queens are fun. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel says at a civil rights conference in Lansing while speaking out against what she describes as efforts to divide people. A drag queen for every school, she adds. For 2 years, the Republican Party has cried out, save women's sports. That's what I was thinking about earlier. It's kind of funny how Republicans have become like the de facto no equality, right, kind of thing, right? That's kind of usually attributed to, like, you know, early socialist movement and socialites and, you know, that kind of stuff, right? Women's rights and women voting and stuff like that, right? And that somehow along the line, like, conservatives were kind of against those kinds of things. But when the tranny sports stuff started popping up, then it was like, no, we got to stand up for women's rights. It's you know, and that's part of that, right? That they're just like, they're just 10 years behind. And then the progressives, the train that never stops, taking us into that abyss, just run circles around them. And they're starting to catch, no, we're not racist. No, we're not transphobes. No, we're, of course, we want to cut off the genitals of our little kids. What are you talking about? For 2 years, the Republican Party has cried out, save women's sports. South Carolina passed a transgender sports ban a month ago, and Louisiana passed one in early June. Thus far, close to 20 states have passed some kind of bill intending to protect the sanctity of women's sports. It's easy to see why. Those bans are really popular. A new Washington Post poll shows banning transgenders from girls' sports roughly 2-1 in support. Images of biologically male runners demolishing the competition or a male swimmer hulking over his hapless, vanquished female rivals are appalling and ridiculous. And thus, it's easy to mobilize the public and politicians in opposition to such absurdities. It's, in a way, it's kind of, it's interesting too, because they've really have gotten us kind of, I mean, it's so absurd and so clownish and so outrageously absurd that what we're supposed to be talking about is like trying to solve the open borders. Let's stop the replacement. All the anti-white madness. Let's push back. No, instead, they're pushing on every issue so hard and so fast that now we're like we're back to arguing with, I mean, objectively speaking, complete insane lunatics about what a woman is. I mean, it's the lowest possible hanging fruit in any kind of empirical discussion about anything. Of what even is reality, right? What even is there anything we can agree on, or are we just, you know? And then you realize you can't have discussions with these people. But unfortunately, these are the people that are running policy. They've infiltrated media and schools and school boards and sports council, like in every walk of life, there they are, right? Or rather, they have been converted, I guess is a better term. They've been indoctrinated and converted, and new generations grow up and they just take over everything. And all of a sudden, we find ourselves in the situation that there's like a deep, not even, there is no deeper discussion, but it's like, you realize that like all of a sudden, 50% of the population, or maybe slightly more, slightly less, I'm not sure, will not even agree with you over such a simple empirical fact of what a woman is. And now we're stuck having to do documentaries about this and arguing. You see how this works? You see how they, meanwhile, what's still advancing behind all of this and still ongoing, right? Oh, it's what still is ongoing is the replacement, is the anti-white, the institutionalized anti-whiteness within the system that we built as white people in the West, right? So it has a very distinct advantage. And then, of course, the more kids you can kind of drive over this cliff as well and make them infertile and cause them confusion, and then later on they kill themselves. And well, if your agenda is depopulation, and basically the gamification of life, but then also the utter synthetical nature of what human life is eventually down the road, when you can do that, that's going to be great for you too. You know, I'm talking about like artificial wombs and new people. That's, you know, it's, what was that? Was it Demolition Man, right? They had VR sex, or what was it again? They just put on the helmets. They didn't actually have real sex. There wasn't real, that's not how you reproduce. You just enjoyed this in the digital space, essentially, right? So it's metaverse shit. That's where they're taking us. And eventually, of course, that means, human reproduction. That will be relegated to some kind of high-tech company that's working on the behest of the state or something. Anyway, yeah, so here's a couple of fun pictures here of a totally fair women's sport here. with some joggers doing very well. More, you remember the swimming team, of course, right? Let me continue, and I want to get to those tweets here, so you'll read that. It's kind of interesting. But at the same time, focusing so much on girls' sports is... Well, there you go. See, I haven't read this before, this piece. But at the same time, focusing so much on girls' sports is a distraction. It is absolutely true. The worst part of the transgender mania isn't that girls face unfair competition. The worst part of this insidious ideology is that it is an assault on the good and the true. It is a radical campaign to deny all physical, biological, and even spiritual differences between male and female, which have been acknowledged and recognized in every human culture and religious tradition for all of human history. Such a bizarre and Sisyphean effort to overturn the natural order has led to such absurdities as the imposition of preferred pronouns and the compulsion, under threat of economic ruin, to affirm the delusional sexual fantasies of very troubled people. Of course, we would be remiss not to acknowledge the profound human cost of a mania, a social contagion that is inflicting profound, irreversible, lifelong harms on America's children, and all over the West, by the way, in the pursuit of the insane lie that a man or a woman can be born in the wrong body. Ultimately, I think he's right there, but at the same time, apparently, there's some studies that point to this, that apparently enough chemical disruption, especially early on in the womb, is actually causing, could be at least partially, I'm not saying maybe it's 100%, the propaganda once the kid are subjected to media and schools and stuff, of course, is another huge part of the problem that adds on to it. But if you have enough endocrine disrupting chemicals in your, especially in the early development of your of the fetus, you can actually get what is known as a female brain in a male body. So it's not that that's wrong. It's just that it's the perversion of saying that our way of life and the chemical soups that we bathe in and all the stuff that we're doing to ourselves has nothing to do with it at all, which of course it does, right? But I get his point. He's right here. It's they've not said why that happens or recognized that, well, why all of a sudden is it like a huge increase, right, of people that now identify as transgender. Do you guys see the clip? Was it Bill Maher, even him? Let me see if I can find that real quick. Yeah, this one. Let me play the first like minute of this here too. This is just absurd. This means it's a social thing. But why people aren't questioning how this is changing so fast is I mean scary. I mean this is Bill Maher, right on what is it again? HBO. I think he mentions right in the beginning of this clip. Listen to this here.
And finally, new rule: if something about the human race is changing at a previously unprecedented rate, we have to at least discuss it. Broken down over time, the LGBT population of America seems to be roughly doubling every generation. According to a recent Gallup poll, less than 1% of Americans born before 1946, that's Joe Biden's generation, identify that way. 2.6% of boomers do, 4.2% of Gen X, 10.5% of millennials, and 20.8% of Gen Z. Which means if we follow this trajectory, we will all be gay in 2054.
And they're laughing at that, right? Woo! You're here in the audience there. But of course, he raises a valid, true point. Like, what in the holy shit is going on here? What's changing, right? Identify, sure. At the end of the day, they might think there's something, but they hopefully... Normal, regular people will go on to have families eventually and stuff like that, right? But it's that's scary, right? So what how did that happen? Is it all just social pressure, peer pressure, media, propaganda, indoctrination? That's if might be the biggest part of it, of course, but I think there's something else going on. That's my point. I think they're doing something to us, and they've been doing something to us for decades, and now we're seeing how that's playing out. We have lower T in males, lower sperm count, right? There's that Canadian documentary from like over a decade ago, The Disappearing Male, right? They're talking about this too. Anyway, it goes on here. The chief victims of the transgenderism explosions are not girls losing out on swimming trophies. The chief victims are the mentally vulnerable people suffering from gender dysphoria who are being transitioned, mutilated every which way, physically, psychologically, and spiritually, and manipulated into extreme harmful and irreversible life choices. And of course, such a profound subversion of the moral order takes a psychological and spiritual toll on the rest of us who have to deal with an endless parade of demoralizing sexual propaganda in the public square. In addition to the government and corporate civil rights mandates and the psychological terror and intimidation campaigns accompanying it. So by all means, state legislatures should keep passing bills to preserve the very basic dignity of women's sports, but don't stop there. Instead of hiding from the trans issue, raise the stakes. Define the issue in clear terms and relentlessly assault the subversive enemies of good and true and the beautiful. Pass laws to fight the end of social contagion. Raise the salience of the issues relentlessly on TV and at political rallies. In short, make it impossible for the public to silently acquiesce from what is happening, and make it impossible for elites to treat this issue as a fait accompli. As a movement, transgenderism thrives on a lack of honest information and free and open debate. To learn about transsexualism and its history is to be horrified and repulsed. And he does, unfortunately, he doesn't also go into Magnus Hirschfeld here and some of his compadres there over in Weimar, Germany, about whatever. John Money did what he did. It doesn't take away from that. John Money, the psychiatrist who coined the term gender identity, and I think he popularized it. It was actually and Lana brings it up in the documentary. That's why you need to see that. All the details are there. It was a Jewish attorney, I believe. Either was him who popularized the term by putting it in literature, or was the vice versa. He came up with the term, but John Money promoted it and kind of made it famous. But regardless, he had a little bit of help right there. Let me just put it that way. Anyway, John Money, he castrated, of course, a baby boy. What were they called again? The Reimer, right? The Reimer twins. And raised him as a girl because he believed gender was a construct. Male on female sexual assaults in women's prisons is now routine. And that in the UK... 58.9% of male-to-female transgenders have at least one sex offense on their record, compared to just 16.8% of the general prison population. Such simple facts are ubiquitous in the public record and yet viciously suppressed by the commanding heights of academia, media, and government. Just Just 15 years ago, transgenderism was a fringe oddity. 40 years ago, it was virtually unheard of. Yet now, recent CDC estimates claim that roughly one in every 70 American teens claims to be transgender. The percentage of transgender teens has roughly doubled since 2017. The age of interventions keeps dropping too. Many children are now socially transitioned before they start first grade, and many are receiving the once unthinkable treatment of puberty blockers. And don't believe the lie that puberty blockers are fully reversible. Such pills can cause lower IQ. Who benefits from that? A critical loss of bone density, permanently immature and stunted sexual reproduction organs and genitalia, and lifelong sexual dysfunction. And that's all before one undergoes a sexual reassignment surgery. In fact, the same drug given as a puberty blocker to tiny little children is also used to chemically castrate sex offenders. Think about that. Yeah, here's the thread there. I want to get to that. You're gonna have to read that for you. Quick break here. Virginia Drifters of our Entropy says, welcome back, Henry. Hope you had a good rest and recharge. I second what you said about crypto. Now it's the time to load up while the Fed's raising interest rates. Expect return to normal at year's end. Probably. I think you're probably right, to be honest. I think they do want to try to destroy it, but I think they've tried that in a number of prior waves. So they've decided if you can't beat it, join it. That's what I think. But for good or for worse, right? I mean, they have their own coins and all that, and they'll launch CBDCs and whatever. But at the end of the day, I don't think they can hold it back, especially if big companies start going into that when you see more economic problems. So, yes, hang in there, crypto bros. Just it'll be a good time to buy now, I think. And it might even dip a little lower. But I do believe it's going to go up like you, Virginian Drifter. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, so here's more on Lupron. We've talked about Lupron before, right? Oh, that's clicks in on the tweet there. The drug they give little boys to stop puberty and to change them to little trans girl is called Lupron. They use the same drug to chemically castrate sex offenders, and it's also being used on to treat prostate cancer, by the way, in men. There's no evidence that anyone is secretly in their brain born the opposite sex, let alone one person out of 70 in the general population. And recently, the number of transgender has skyrocketed. But why? A 2020 report from the London Times on GIDS, the UK's top gender clinic, hints at what really is going on. 35 GIDS staffers have resigned in the past 3 years, many alarmed by the rush to medicalization and the way mermaids Instagram trans influencers at the CBBC program AmLeo present transition as uncomplicated. They say they are seeing girls with a panoply of other issues: anxiety, depression, self-harm, undiagnosed autism, victims of homophobic bullying and sexual abuse, for whom transitioning to a male body was presented online as the universal panacea, often a norm. Tomboyish disgust at their new breasts, eliciting sudden and unwanted sexual attention from men, is interpreted as a certainty that they are in the, quote, wrong body. Yet, instead of interrogating these underlying issues, clinicians are told to affirm a young person's trans identity and prescribe the puberty blockers that trans campaigners fiercely insist are their right. So basically what they're saying here is that they've, as usual, I still think there's something with the chemical thing that's adding on to this. I think it's foolish to take that out of the equation. But what they're saying is that these are normal things that have happened before, but now they're reinterpreting those things as kind of a new disease. They've invented a new disease and said, if you're feeling XYZ, you know, kind of like COVID, if you're having any of these symptoms, it's COVID. If you have any of these symptoms, it's gender dysphoria and you have to transition. Here's the meds. Here's all the literature. Here's all the supportive networks. Aren't you feeling great? Go to this Pride event. It's full of balloons and fun people and dances and everyone's having a good time watching, men strip in front of kids. Yeah. There's evidence of transgenderism as mental health cure all everywhere, should one look for it. Transgender activists have a special slang, eggs, to describe future trans people they desire to, quote, hatch. unquote. Just a few days ago, one of the perverted groomers, comics author Magdalene Visaggio, posted a guide. We Are Everywhere, a field guide to clocking terrified trans femme eggs, along with things like liking Sailor Moon a lot and playing video games with opposite sex avatars. Visaggio's list of transgender tells include things like dead eyes, not taking physical care of oneself, feeling despair, anger, numbness, and disconnection. Yeah, because that's in these times, that's totally uncommon, right? Having no plans for 5 years in the future, lacking agency over one's life. These are just what early teenage or what kids feel, right? In other words, it's a long list of depression symptoms. Visaggio then describes how to hatch eggs by presenting transgenderism as a path out of depression and suicidal ideation, right? So again, it's a fix to all your problems. If you just do this, everything will be great. Don't worry about it. The transgender fad in America is creating horrors beyond comprehension. Horrors that are ignored by the press and denied by the medical establishment. According to pro-transgender activists, sexual detransitions are extremely rare and usually only a result of transsexual encountering transphobia in real life. But in reality, there are already many ex-trans people. Their harrowing accounts are becoming more and more frequent and more dreadful. Here is one from just a few days ago, and beware, it's not for the faint of heart or weak of stomach. So here's the tweet thread I want to read to you here. And then I think we'll move on from this article here, but it's good stuff here. I want to tell everyone what they took from us, what irreversibly really means, and what it really, what that reality looks like for us. No one told me any of what I'm going to tell you now. I have no sensation in my crotch region at all. You could stab me with a knife and I would not know. The entire area is numb, like it's shell-shocked and unable to comprehend what happened, even 4 years on. I tore a sutra 4 days post-recovery. They promised to address it. I begged them in emails to fix it. They scorned me instead. Years later, I have what looks like a chunk of missing flesh next to my new vagina. It literally looks like someone hacked at me. No one told me that the base area of your penis is left. It can't be removed, meaning you're left with a literal stump inside that twitches. When you take testosterone and your libido returns, you wake up with morning wood without the tree. I wish this was a joke. And if you do take testosterone after being post-op, you run the risk of internal hair growth in the neo-vagina. Imagine dealing with internal hair growth after everything. What a choice. Be healthy on testosterone and a freak, or remain a sexless eunuch. And that's something that I will never come back. That will never come back. And one of the reasons why I got surgery. My sex drive died about 6 months on human replacement, HRT, right? Human replacement, is that the hormone blockers, or is that how they changed that hormone, right? The hormone replacement therapy. That's what it is. Hormone replacement therapy. That's right. My sex drive died about 6 months on hormone replacement therapy. And at the time I was glad to be rid of it. But now 10 years later, I'm realizing what I'm missing out on and what I won't get back. Then there's the act of going to, listen to this here. Then there's the act of going to the toilet. It takes me about 10 minutes to empty my bladder. It's extremely slow, painful, and because it dribbles, no matter how much I relax, it will then just go all over that entire area, leaving me soaking. So after cleaning myself up, I find moments later that my underwear is wet. No matter how much I wipe, it slowly drips out of the best part of an hour. I never knew at 35 I ran the risk like smelling like piss everywhere I went. Now I get to the point where I'm detransitioned and the realization that this is permanent and it's catching up with me. During transition, I was obsessive and deeply unwell. I cannot believe they were they were allowed to do this to me, even after all the red flags. I wasn't even asked if I wanted to freeze sperm or wanted kids. In my obsessive, deeply unwell state, they just nodded along and didn't tell me the realities, what life would be like. And finally, there's dilation, which is some sort of demonic ceremony where you impale yourself for 20 agonizing minutes to remind you of your own stupidity. I'm not even sure what that is, to be honest, but I guess they got to keep the wound open or something like that, I would assume, right? Anyway, you get the idea. This article goes on here, and they bring up a couple of examples of people that have done this and all the problems with it and all that kind of stuff, right? You should check it out. We don't have the time to go through the rest, but he says there at the end, he says this is a battle that can be won and should be won, but it cannot be won with cowardice, by submitting to the left's moral imperialism and begging for the right to maybe please just slow things down a little bit. It can only be won by prudently, proudly rejecting the entirety of gender ideology and identifying for exactly what it is, a warped effort to get more and more people to mutilate their bodies to affirm the decision of sick people who already have done so. Find ex-trans voices, give them a platform, put the mutilators in jail, ban drag queen story hour, and never ever concede an inch in the long run. The truth will win out. Or will out, I guess. All right. There you go. I think that's enough of that. Hope you enjoy that. Oh, my God. Yeah, rough listening to you, but what are you going to do, right? What are you going to do? You got to be aware of this shit, that this is like, this is the front line of what they're pushing the hardest right now. And partially why? Because they've won on all the other issues, right? The borders remain open. We're still being replaced. Our kids are being hated if they're white. You know, it's institutionalized within the system. We're being discriminated against on every turn, right? Where's the pushback? No, let's bicker and fight over dumb shit with each other. So tired of fucking people. I'm just... Anyway, I can go into this here, but it's just... I mean, the stupidity and the just the naivety of what it is that we're facing here is just beyond, like, people have no fucking clue. And they have the luxury to sit around and dabble and argue and babble about shit that doesn't matter, shit that's just fables. Republican bill would allow adults to sue doctors for youth sex transition. So that's something good, right? But again, there's much more that has to be done than that. Lycan Warrior over on NTP says, is transgenderism an ideology that is promoted by people who secretly worship Baphomet? maybe, I'm not sure. There's that issue of like how they take the alchemical, you know, from like the Western esoteric tradition, like literally, which it was never obviously meant to be. This is, you know, the marriage of opposites, that's of course, you know, you coming together as a man, as a woman, and having a child, and these, you know, these beautiful, eternal, natural principles, essentially, that exists in nature. But all of a sudden, you have this weird obsession that we should, like, be like, you know, gods or angels or something like that, where it's, like, beyond gender, beyond sex, rather, and merging these two, or that's some, like, you know, new state or whatever. And I do, maybe there's some that really, you know, believe that or whatever, but most of this is just being sold to kids, to be honest. Thank you, Lycan, I appreciate that. And you have more of this, right? Disney bus driver among 12 suspects arrested in undercover child predatory investigation. The 30-year-old sent photos of his genitals to a minor. Here's a picture. Look at that picture. It's okay. If there ever was a picture of a pedophile, I probably would pull this up, to be honest. It's just, you can't. Here's Zach. Predator and Disney bus driver Zachary Hudson, 30. Pictured was busted and arrested by Orange County deputies on June 6 while he was working at Disney's Magical Kingdom. So he got stuck in a child sting operation. And remember this, just a little while ago, you had these fact checkers post online is maligning the Walt Disney Company. Lacks evidence. There's totally no online posts are using flawed logic and false information to malign the Walt Disney Company as sympathetic to pedophiles or predatory towards young children after the company publicly opposed a Florida bill, blah, blah, blah. Totally not happening. Absolutely not. All right, I think we have to wrap up there. I'm a little bit over time. There are some more stories I wanted. Let me see if we can end on something here. Let me see here. Yeah, baby formula halted again by Abbott. That's just crazy. Larvae pasta being promoted and sold in Portugal. I think we can do this here then. Biden is investing tens of millions to get cars off the road, right? Talked about him earlier a little bit, but basically Agenda 2030, right? Basically getting you, and I mentioned this multiple times, that this is how they did it in Sweden. They make huge investments in like public transports and trams and trains and bus infrastructure and all that kind of stuff. And then that's usually in place, and then they raise gas prices or taxes on it or some other gay op that causes prices to go up, and basically saying, or they tax you astronomically on certain vehicles and things like this, right? So here's Biden admitting this in a recent speech he did. I think that this is like at some summit or something like that.
And we're investing almost $100 billion in public transit and rail. For all the studies show that it will take millions of cars off the road and significantly reduce pollution if there's a serious transportation system available.
There you go. Couldn't have said it better myself. That's the plan, right? Just invest and build out the network, and then later on, when it's time to go, when you can't afford it anymore, well, they have the buses right there. It's very convenient. Of course, they don't want you out on the countryside anyway. They want you get off of there. Get into the cities, into the mega hubs, right? Go on the little trams around, whatever you need to do. And then you eat the bugs, and you stay in your pod. And if you want to go anywhere, you get on the VR headset. All right, we had another couple of stories like this, too. A guy in Washington was arrested, I guess, for quoting the Bible. Good luck, Christians. They're arresting you now for rewriting what's in your book. Because it was basically like terrorism, right? It was huge armored patrols. Look at these pictures here of like the vehicles that rolled in just to like to get this guy. I can read about it more on VDare. Another guy, too, spray-painted groomer. On a librarian charged with a hate crime after spray painting groomer on libraries during Pride Month. There you go. That's what it's about right there. All right, guys, we're going to wrap up right there. Thank you for listening today, for watching. How are you tuning in? We do appreciate you. Let me just check Rumble real quick. I'm going to check Odyssey real quick too. Don't want to miss anybody if you did that, but yeah, it's good to be back with you guys again. Lots to cover, lots to go through, lots of problems. There's a lot of problems, but there's also a lot of good things happening at the same time. Shouldn't be discouraged. There's a lot of people waking up to this. There's a lot of people that are getting tired of the bullshit. There's a lot of people that are starting to organize and fighting back. And regardless of weird factionalism and weird spurgs and stuff like that. There's a lot of normal people out there that are sick and fed up with this shit, and they've had it, and they're beginning to organize in a positive direction, which is basically right. I mean, politically, sure, okay, go ahead, you know, kind of thing. But at the end of the day, it will be on the ground, and it will be people around you. That's what it's going to be about, and people that you know, people that you can trust, right? And I wanted to leave you with this as a positive little song here, right? We had the summer solstice. It was a beautiful little song. Someone in the UK. Saying, actually, I have a couple on Entropy here. Let me do these real quick so we don't miss those. Sorry for missing those. I didn't see them right away. Whatever. Clown World Show. All right. Let me see here. What do we got? I guess it's just, what is it? No, let me see here. Sorry, guys. Kratznoy, whatever. Keep it up. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. There was a couple from Clown World Show. Thank you for those. I appreciate the fraction of the library token. Very nice of you. Listen to this. This is a nice little song here regarding yesterday, then the day that has the most sunlight, at least in the Western sorry, Northern Hemisphere.
Oh, do not tell the priest I plied, for he would call it a sin. For we've been up in the woods all night, conjuring some marin. And we bring you news by word of mouth, good news for cattle and corn. For now is the sun come up from the south by oak and ash and thorn. Sing oak and ash and thorn, good sir, all of our midsummer's morn. England shall bide till judgment tide by oak and ash and thorn.
There you go. It was recorded in Sherwood Forest, actually, of all places. At least that's what the YouTube said there. A little nice, is that a little cam right there? No. Anyway, let's not ruin that, but good stuff. All right, anyway, boys and girls, if you want to join us for more, check out redicemembers.com. We have some good stuff up there right now. Of course, check out the, as I said, Lana's latest. If you haven't seen that yet, that's definitely worth it alone. A little mini doc on the gender ideology, the dark and perverted roots of that. Of course, check out our Weekend Warrior show as well, exclusive for you guys that are members. You can join us over at subscribestar.com/redice. We have different tiers there if you want to join us. And, oh yeah, we got to say thanks to our executive producers as well. Who do we have here? Where are you guys? Let me pull that in real quick. Here we go. From June 9th. So it might have been an update in this year. But T. Lothrop Stoddard, if you're watching, thank you, man. Appreciate it. Always good to see you. Thank you so much. Tom Bourne, V. Miller, and Loki's Lad. Thank you, guys. We appreciate all of you for the executive producer tier over on Subscribestar. We have a producer tier as well. Check that out if you're interested. Helps us with the shows, the videos, and keep going. And again, we have an aspiration of expanding and growing further by employing people. So if you want to help out with that, that's really one of the best ways. You can donate as well, redice.tv/donate, if you feel so inclined. And keep in mind, by the way, when you sign up for a membership, you don't on our end, you don't have to give your real name. All we need is a username and an email, which can be any email. We don't store any payment details. These are all third parties that host that on their end. So it's just basically like a link between that and us in the form of an email or DM or a message, and that's it. So you can be completely anonymous, and you can have any name you want, right? Anyway, you can sign up over on Entropy as well, entropystream.live/redicetv. We have a Cash App. We have an e-check option for those in the U.S. We do accept cryptos. Now is a good time, of course, to get into cryptos. If you feel so inclined, if you ever wanted to have a good purchase price, now it's a good time before I think it'll start going up again. We'll see how things are doing here in three months, something like that. And we have a mailing address for you guys right there as well. All right, I think that's it for us. Thank you so much, everybody. If you're joining us over on Entropy, Rumble, Odyssey, where else are we going out? We're going out to Float. We have a YouTube channel as well, by the way, if you want to join us over there. Some people do prefer that, and we'll see how long it holds. We got a strike for one of the guests mentioning the totally safe and effective C19 shot. We'll see if this one goes down on the same reason. But anyway, a couple of places where you can find us, always, of course, at redice.tv. But otherwise, we have some channels you can go straight to out there as well. All right. Thank you, guys. We appreciate you. Stay well. Keep fighting. Keep your moods high. Keep morale high. And we'll be back with more here soon. We have some interviews coming up. We also have, of course, Flashback Friday on Friday. We'll see you guys later. Take care.
Do you love Red Ice? Want more? Get access to exclusive material by signing up for a Red Ice membership. You'll be able to watch Weekend Warrior, our flagship show, the second hour of interviews, and other special feature videos only for subscribers. Were you a member and we lost you along the way? Renew! We love and appreciate you guys and gals and cannot do this without you. Help us be a sane voice, a lighthouse in the sea of insanity. As times get tougher, as people are searching for answers, they're going to need content like Red Ice. A little of all your support can go a long way. Thank you.